Becky talks to Lisa Cassidy, Norwich's own international soprano, to find out about her career, and I'm delighted to say that Lisa has exclusively agreed to let us play her moving rendition of Surabaya Johnny, which follows the interview. Lisa, it's lovely of you to spare the time to come and talk for us. We appreciate how busy you are. Can you tell me what inspired you to sing professionally? How did it all start?
I think, actually, I always wanted to sing. First memories I have are, actually, funnily enough, standing, because I grew up in the Middle East, and we'd, often my parents would be, out gallivanting, doing this, that, the other, and I would just stand in the water, stand in the sea, and I'd be there singing out, romantically thinking, oh, I'm singing to the fish and the mermaids and all this crazy stuff, and that was very young. And then when I went to school, it just kind of came very naturally. I was very kind of lucky that I joined the choirs, and naturally my singing voice was kind of there for me already. I naturally fell into doing the solos, and as reading music, it just kind of fell into me as well. It flowed. And then when I left school, I thought, I want to join a choir. I want to carry on singing. And that's when I went into doing, I worked with a guitarist for a while called Peter Taylor, and we did a lot of folk music and things like that. And then after that, I got asked to sing in a charity concert, classical music, and I thought, I'll need to find a pianist. And I met a pianist who said to me, you could be a professional singer. You've got what it takes, because I didn't know what it was that it took necessarily. And I said, ooh, and straight away, as soon as that was said, that's exactly what I knew I had to do. It was definitely a raison d'etre.
I think that's wonderful. Mm. The image of you standing there singing out to the sea.
I know, I was a romantic little girl.
So you went on, there's been a lot of training in your life, but mm-hmm. you trained at the Royal Conservatoire in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you have a good memory?
Yes. Oh, wow. Glasgow is quite different to Norwich. yes. Well, it's kind of epic, glamorous, fun, vibrant place, isn't it, Glasgow? Yeah. You compare it to, Edinburgh is wonderful too, but there's something really modern, I think, about Glasgow. And the Conservatoire, again, I don't have any bad memories. It was just full of good people trying to, and succeeding in making really good music and giving me the opportunity to do the same, really. So, going to Glasgow was a fantastic opportunity for me, especially seeing as I'd studied here at UEA for my master's degree. Within a university, as opposed to a music conservatoire, it tends to be somewhat more academic. I had to write dissertations and things, although I did also perform. But when you go to a conservatoire, it's just, we don't want any writing, actually. We just want to make sure that you're, doing the performing that you need and having all the skills there. So it was kind of perfect complement to what I'd done, I think, at UEA.
And did you have a favourite teacher?
I suppose my teacher, my singing teacher, because we all get allocated a singing teacher, I suppose she would be the one that really springs to mind. I remember when I first went to the conservatoire, you're brand new, you don't know anybody, and they line you up and they allocate who your teacher's going to be, because they've listened to you in the audition and they know the sort of, they think they know, or I'm sure they do know what they think will be best for you. And I stood there in the line and I looked along the line of the singing teachers and I thought, that's Judith Howarth. And I knew her from having watched her sing on a DVD that I watched over and over again, singing in Die Fledermaus. And in that performance, there was even Pavarotti singing on there. And it was a very glamorous, Joan Sutherland was in it, although an older Joan Sutherland, still very good. And I thought, oh my God, it's that woman that I've been watching for years. And then suddenly they said, Lisa Cassidy, Judith Howarth. And I walked over to her with the big, she must have thought I was mad. A grin on my face. I've got the person, exact person I would have wanted. Yeah, it's lovely. So she's probably one of the most memorable things or people that happened to me in Glasgow.
It sounds as though everything played out in the universe for you.
I think
it's wonderful. I know training is an ongoing exercise for singers. And what qualities are you always looking to develop?
I think there are many things that you're looking to find as a classical singer. But the main two things would be resonance and imagination. What we're looking to find is this ring that runs through our whole body, through our whole instrument, through our whole self, and maybe beyond, that carries the voice into the room with as little work, push, strain or stress as possible. It's just like you're finding the truth of your sound. Like when you place a bow on a cello, you're looking to find that absolute simplicity of it. There it is. And then you can play the instrument the way you need to, the way, so it's at your beck and call, because the instrument, the voice, can be very tricksy. Because of course it's attached to our body and it's attached to our brain and our emotions. The other thing that I always think is very important for vocal technique is imagination. You can have the best instrument set up in the world. If you haven't sewed in the idea, the image of what it is you're trying to say, if it's not some sort of truth for you, your singing is going to be dull. And I've met a lot of singers who have been gifted with very powerful, very good, very robust, very successful instruments. And in my view, they miss the very thing that they need, the very thing that we're questing for as musicians. It's how can I use this thing that's born into me to say this?
It's that the meeting point between singers and actors.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah. In fact, they always say that a singer must always be a singing actor. Because what are you saying? What's the point of having words if you haven't got something real to say?
And what emotions interest you when you're singing?
You know, it's funny you should ask that, because I come across, I think, as a very cheerful, to use a lovely word, bubbly sort of person. But actually behind it, there's always this kind of line of sadness, this terrible thing I want to express that goes with melancholy. So I have all this happiness, and at the moment I'm doing, for example, a comedy opera, which is a nice change after 4 years of tragedy operas. But I'm kind of thinking all the time, I think, yes, that's right, the emotion of fear. Fear is a very important thing for us singers, because it is hugely motivating. It's carries us into the energy that we need in order to perform, rather like an actor again. But it's not just fear, is it? It's everything that goes with that: sadness, loss, desire, all those things that tie in together for us as performers. And that's, happiness is easier to understand, access and express in some ways. Fear is the, and darkness is the interesting thing, isn't it? It's the human condition. It's the reason that we're all, I think that we perform is partly so that we can merge, so that we can join in something with the audience, a truth with the audience. Again, we come back to truth quite a lot, don't we? Because we're solitary as performers, as humans. But when we sing, or maybe the same when we act, we for a short while create this bridge between us that can be seen as a union that is so delicate and transitory, but so vital for us, I think, as humans to experience. Because if we can't find that, then it's quite lonely.
And I think there was quite a dark opera that you've done. A French,
yes,
one, if I remember right.
Oh, yes. That's La Voix Humaine, which was written by Poulenc. It's a setting of Jean Cocteau's play, The Human Voice, La Voix,
right,
Humaine. And actually, there's a story. They're both gay chaps, and they both had terribly, terribly sad heartbreaks that had made everything really difficult and tragic and tumultuous for them. And then there was a woman that Poulenc knew called Denise Duval, who he set the opera for, and she had terrible, terrible heartbreak. And the opera is basically about that. It's endless suffering. And if you listen to it, the way Poulenc manages to capture it, again, it's heightened, terrible reality of suffering. And there's a story that when Poulenc first played it to Denise Duval, they just sat and they just wept all the way through the opera, because it expressed their terrible loss, their terrible suffering. I think Poulenc particularly had an extra hard time because he was Catholic as well. So he had conflicts about, in a time when homosexuality was a very controversial thing as well, all these different things battling against him, and the main thing, of course, heartbreak, which is universal. Yeah, so.
And you sing it all in French?
All in French.
How long did it take you to learn?
It took me a year to learn it.
A year?
Yeah, and it's because not only is it all in French, and although I pronounce French well, I don't speak the language, it's extremely complex musically. It's not like a tune. Oh, I'll remember it because that bit goes like that. I mean, there are some small tunes, but on the whole, it is a sort of musical narrative that just unfolds sympathetically to the text in a non-tune way. But it was worth it. It was an excellent piece of music, a masterpiece.
It does sound wonderful. I know we will talk about recording later, but it would be lovely if that was on a recording, I think, for people to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might well do that.
So on a more cheerful note, what's life like for an international singer such as yourself?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? I think on one level, it's very glamorous. You know, you get to wear these beautiful costumes that you choose yourself, which I think is a bonus, because often when you go to a costume department, they choose you something and you think, that's not quite right. But in my case, I get to select and take the correct ball gown, all the things that I want to, you know, have exactly the way I want them are in place. But it's also, there's a lot of respect that goes with it. That's wonderful. A lot of, you know, notice is given to me, and a lot of people get a lot of joy out of it, which is super. But it's also quite a lonely thing, or, yeah, a solitary thing to do as well. So on one level, you get the glamour. You get the satisfaction of knowing that your art form that you pour your life and soul into is actually being listened to and most of the time appreciated the way it needs to be. But on the other hand, yes, you have a lot of solitude, a lot of thinking, right, I'll set my timer for an hour. That's an hour of memorising and then I'll do this. Knowing that you've done that hour, sometimes having a regulated time in which you're doing it, eases your mind and you think, okay, I've done the thing that I need to do today. Tomorrow I'll do it again and on into eternity. So it's a beautiful mixture of something you're very proud of doing and also something that can sometimes be a cross to bear.
Who's excited you the most to work with, I mean?
Well, I think, apart from Judith, when glamorous meeting
Judith
with her... I think I got into the Britain Peers Young Artist Programme a few years ago, and there was a baritone there called Christian Gerherha, who also worked very much, very closely with a pianist called Gerald Huber. And I had a week studying with them, and it culminated in a concert. But the main thing was that I got to hear this perfect balance of a person using their voice, understanding it, and weaving their imagination through it. So he found, more than I think anyone I've heard, he definitely found that idea of the Malteser on the straw, this